Father's Day, everyone. As I was thinking about what I was going to talk about today, and when Pastor Paul asked me if I would share some ideas and thoughts with you, I said, sure, I'd do that. Normally, Father's Day is a special day in our family, as you might imagine, and you'll learn why in a few minutes. The story from Samuel, as I said earlier, kind of describes to me what fathers probably are like. Some are good, some are, you know, authoritarian-like, like Saul, who is the king. He's the father of Israel. He ruled the land. He decided, as we heard last week in the message, you know, who was going to pay taxes, how much taxes you were going to pay. He just, you know, you kind of had to accept that fact. So he was our first father, and I'm not going to dwell on him too much because he ran out of favor with God. If you read subsequent chapters after last week, you know, he did a few things that were displeasing to God. But Samuel is, in many ways, a second father-like figure in this story. He was the religious leader of the country, and he had a lot of authority because of that position. And as a result of that, he was a pretty important man as you look at the history of the Israelites. But he, in many ways, was a weaker father than Saul was because he was afraid of Saul. He knew he served at the beckoning of the king, and he said, I don't really want to go to Bethlehem. The reason I don't want to go is because I know you're asking me, God, to anoint a new king there, and yet we already have a king. Seems like, you know, we're putting, you know, two horses in opposite directions pulling against each other, and that's a dangerous thing, and I don't want to be in the middle of this. So while he was a father-like figure, in many ways, he was a little bit afraid of the true king or the true father there. So, but God says to him, no, go, do this. I have a plan. I have someone that I want to re-anoint as the new king who will pay attention to my ways and do what I bid and have me in the king's heart so that the country prospers. So Samuel goes to Bethlehem. Now the city itself had its own fathers, right? We see them, the city leaders, or we call them the city fathers sometime. They came out of the city to meet Samuel. They were afraid too, because not only is there a king involved in this, but Bethlehem, you know, was considered one of those very, very weak communities. I can imagine it was like going out to Clarkston. You know, not very important in the valley, right? What Logan says goes. And so, you know, it's like the city fathers came out at the, you know, the city gates or probably went out to meet Samuel as they were coming. And, you know, the question is how they heard he was coming. I'm sure the word spread quickly. You know, Samuel's coming to town. And what does he want with us? Why is he coming to town? What's the deal here? And so Samuel comes and they ask him, do you come peaceably? And he said, yeah, peaceably. So what are you going to do here? What's the purpose? And I often wondered when I read this story, and as I was reflecting on it, here's the city fathers asking Samuel, this important religious leader, what are you doing here? What's the purpose? You're dragging along a heifer or a bullock for a sacrifice. What are you going to do? I wondered if he told them when they were outside the gate, oh, I've come to anoint a new king in town. Can you imagine that? I was like, boy, if I was a city father, I wouldn't want that to happen. Right? We already have Saul, and we know what Saul's like. He's not a very nice guy. He was a pretty brutal man. He's going to come to Bethlehem, and we don't have any way to defend ourselves. And then we have a fourth father that's there as well. We have Jesse. Now, I don't expect that Jesse was one of the fathers that went out to meet him. No, I think the city fathers probably went and had to find Jesse someplace and said, Jesse, get your kids together. Get them put on their clothes. The high priest here, he's going to make a sacrifice and he's going to do what? He's going to make one of my sons king? You got to be kidding me. Jesse, I don't think you know, realize what that meant, and it kind of sat in, and you go, man, that's pretty cool. I'm going to have a king in my family. That increases my stature. So not only was he going to be, he was proud, probably, of his sons. You know, one of them has, you know, kind of stepped up. But I wondered if a little pride actually didn't get in there, too. You know, I'm going to become an important man now. I can get out of this, Clarkston. Right? That little hole in the wall over on the other side of town. So he's thinking that, that's pretty cool. I'm going to have that. So he's going to get plucked out of obscurity, and the kid is, one of his kids is going to be an important person. Now, Jesse, as we read the story, he had 8 sons, and I can relate to that. I know, some of you may know this, but I grew up in a family. I have 5 brothers. So there's 6 of us. We know what that's like. I didn't, you know, not 8, okay, it's not quite 8, but it's still enough. My poor mother was pretty much stressed out her whole life, as you can imagine. 8 sons going around beating up on each other, which was not very common. There were 6 of us in 10 years. So we were all pretty close to each other. Yeah, right. Get in my way and I'm going to beat you down. It was a good thing I was at the top of the pile, you know. My older brother, I have 1 above me, 4 below me. And when I used to come home from college, as soon as I got out of the car, I had to be careful because the other 4 would jump you. And they beat on you for a while just to exert their place in town. So I imagine Jesse has this family thing going too, you know. But he's going, oh, yeah, you know what, Jewish family. Who's the most important in a Jewish family? The firstborn, right? So he's going, yeah, Eliab, that's the guy. He's going to be king. He walks in front of Samuel and says, yeah, Samuel looks at him, tall, handsome, athletic looking, kingly like, just like Saul was. And Samuel's thinking, that's who God picks. And God says, no, I don't look on that part of people. You look on the outside, I look on the inside. So Jesse's going, okay, you know, that's kind of not so cool because the firstborn should have his place and he doesn't. So he takes Abinadab, presents him to Samuel. Nope, not the one. Shammah, nope, not him. Jesse number 2, nope, not him. George, no George, get him out of here. Peter, no Peters. We don't want him as, and finally it goes through the list and you get to the last 2. And number 6, number 7, they're going, cool, we were at the bottom of the pile, now we're moving up because we're going to be king, right? No, that's not what happens either. So Samuel's sitting there kind of going to Jesse. He's going, something's wrong here, Jesse, he says, because God sent me here. Your family was supposed to present a king. Is there any others? Jesse's going, oh, gosh, you know. Who am I going to, now of my other sons, send out to the fields, to David, up on Clarkston Mountain where the sheep are running? That's where little David's running around, and you got to go get him. And someone from the first service said, yeah, well, I often wondered, you know, did the son that had to go get David come back with him, or did he just have to tend the sheep? It would be kind of embarrassing, right? The high priest comes. You know, so there's places. We put ourselves in our places. And I often thought of my family that way, too. I was the number 2 son, my oldest brother. You know, he was the one that a lot of things were expected of. Not much was expected of me because, you know, the oldest son has that expectation. And even today, you know, when I talk to my father on the phone, he doesn't ever ask me any questions about me. But he tells me about all my other brothers. And my other brothers, particularly my youngest brother, he always thought that he was the most slighted of the family. And yet, I only ever hear about him when I talk to my father. And I suspect that when my father talks to him, he talks about all the other brothers, but never talks about him. So the perception of things that we have within a family is really important. And it's my perception is very much different than my brother's perceptions. So I can imagine that Eliab and Abinadab and Shammah and Peter and George and Jesse number 2, they are all thinking, oh, brother. You know, the little one now rises to the top of the pile, and he's just a dreamer anyway, right? He was a musician. He was a singer. He was, You know, he's pretty good with a slingshot, because later on we hear he kills a bear and kills a lion, and then he goes and kills Goliath. I mean, good grief. You know, he's kind of stepped up to the plate and really shown. So expectations are things that are important for us to realize, but everyone's expectation is somewhat different. So, you know, I'm probably thinking that they just thought David, he was not too much of an important person at that time, and yet God was not looking at him as an outward appearance, even though we said that he was ruddy, and by that they meant he was probably dark-complected from being out with the sheep all the time. So that kind of suggests to me that the other ones were sitting around the tent not doing much. He probably, you know, he was small of stature. You know, his father probably, as fathers do, we categorize our children by, are they smart? Are they athletic? Are they thinkers? Are they businesslike? You know, are they artistic-like? All of those types of things. And yet, at the same time, sometimes we have, you know, boy, don't be so dumb. How often have we not, as fathers, said those types of things to each other? And so David gets brought before Samuel and gets selected, anointed, and his brothers had to stand there and watch that. And I was wondering then if they knew the story of Joseph. I mean, that was not so long ago. Here was a family with 12 brothers. They only had 8. I only had 6. My mother was from a family with 7 brothers, and she complained about them all the time too. Well, if they knew the story of Jacob, and they knew that their young brother was now anointed king, and you can imagine that Saul heard about it pretty quick, because the Israelites at that time were not that big of a nation. It's not like we could anoint someone in Clarkston and Obama wouldn't hear about it. Probably wouldn't happen, right? So the question is, were they protective of their brother? Now I look at my brothers and I said, yeah, we fought. We broke each other's arms. We did all kinds of mean things to each other. But at school, if somebody picked on one of the brothers, you can imagine, you had not one, not two, not three, usually got up to all 6, and somebody grabbed whoever it was. Then it was just a question of whether their clan had as many brothers as our clan did, as to who solved that problem. So, as we think of our stories, and I think of my own father had a pretty much hands-off approach to life. We grew up on a farm. He worked outside the farm because the farm wouldn't make enough money. And so he set tasks for us. And poor mother was there all day long with 6 rambunctious boys doing things that boys do. And his approach to it was just lock the door at 8 o'clock when you send them out to do their chores. Make sure there's a treat for them at 10 o'clock. Make sure that lunch is ready at noon. Have another cold drink for them at 3 o'clock and let happen what happens. Because you can't control it, Mom. And we turned out kind of all right. Now, my dad gave us these jobs, and the nice thing about it is because he was off somewhere else during the day, when things broke, we had to fix them. And if we didn't fix them quite right at night, he helped us fix them properly. And we learned an awful lot from him. And as a result, I am confident enough to stand up here in front of you today. How many of you are willing to do that? I suspect not quite so many. So I have to give my dad some kudos. Now, there was one job on the farm that Dad would not allow us to do. And that always kind of bugged me. And it kind of relates back to our story in Mark. He would never let us plant corn. But we had to cultivate it. Now, my father, I think it was cross-eyed in many ways because there wasn't ever a straight row of corn in the field. Now, if you go drive around the valley these days, just do it. Next time you're out on your little junkets, look at the corn rows. Perfectly straight, right? We've had GPS systems, technology, all of this stuff. All he had was an old tractor with a little swing arm that made a mark in the next one, and then it was just a question of what he was thinking about as he was driving down the tractor. The roads were as crooked as could be. And he said to us, well, you know, I get more corn in the field that way. But those of you that know me, I'm a plant physiologist up at the university. Ideally, there's a perfect plant population that one needs to have in the field in order to optimize productivity, provided all other resources aren't limiting, or any other resource isn't limiting. And crooked roads don't meet that criteria. But we had to cultivate them. And then he would say, don't cultivate any of those corn out because I need the grain that comes from them, right? And so when we were little, it was like, okay, try not to cultivate the corn out. But I think in many ways we were like David. If anybody's ever sat on a tractor on a hot, you know, July day cultivating corn, what did you do to occupy your time? I'm sure it was the same types of things that David did as he was taking care of his sheep. He was singing, reciting poetry to himself, you know, thinking about the world, doing those types of things that are going to create leaders, and so that he could become a great leader. And so my father, I have to admit, was in many ways a pretty smart guy because he allowed us to cultivate out a few corn, to fix a few tractors, to, you know, build this, take that apart, and do all of those kinds of things, even though he knew that sometime it meant a little bit of work for himself. But the net result was that we grew, as our scripture passage in Mark says. It says here, the earth produces of itself, first the stalk, then the head, then the full grain in the head, and when the grain is ripe, you know, the harvester comes in. So in many ways, our children are like that. We need to give them those opportunities. And so for that, I want to take this time to acknowledge what my father did for me. And I hope that as this day progresses, those of you that are fathers can hear that from your children. Those of you that have fathers yet can convey that message to your fathers that we need to thank you for letting us grow and be nurtured to be producing. And how that happens, we don't know. I mean, what we do know is that God is doing it, and so that the result, the end result, will be a yield of 30, 60, or 100-fold. And as I look around and see people here as they grow, as I think of Michaela's flower here and saw Maya grow through this church, I know that that's going to happen. Thank you.